just in these past few years, I concurrently lost my mom, my dad, my dog, and my mother-in-law. And this was over the span of a year and a half. And there were days at work in which I was just loaded with grief or sadness or waiting for a phone call or monitoring, you know, a hospital stay or whatever. And I couldn't ever let that break through because I owed it to the people of New Hampshire who were watching that show to not be any of that, to be my regular, professional, expectant self, delivering them the news they needed to know.
Join me weekly as we unlock strategies to elevate every aspect of your life through the power of mindset. If you enjoy the show, subscribe so that you never miss an episode. As Walter Cronkite once said, in seeking truth, you have to get both sides of a story. Today, I am honored to welcome Jennifer Vaughn to Mindset Reinvented. Jennifer is an Emmy-nominated TV news anchor with over 30 years' experience in delivering news to millions of viewers. She's mastered the art of focus and mindset control. And in high-pressure situations, she's here to share her insights on maintaining composure and confidence in challenging circumstances. Jennifer, I am thrilled that you're part of this today. So welcome to the show.
What a pleasure. It's so wonderful to talk to you. These are such important topics. They impact everybody around us. It's such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Very welcome. So let's dive right in. As a clearly a respected TV news anchor, you've been around a while. You're constantly in the public eye. Can you walk us through the mental and the emotional demands of a typical day in your role?
Emotionally, you're also dealing with the first part of your day or the latter part of your day, which could involve something at home, something internally within your family. And these are all of the things that you and I and everybody will deal with. You compartmentalize them somehow, and then you report to your job or you take the phone call or whatever it is that you do that your day requires or your job requires. So TV is a little bit different in that every part of you, from sort of your head to your toe, from your hair to your shoes, is fully represented on television. But you're not there to talk about yourself. You're there to talk about the story. You're there to introduce the reporter. You're there for, you know, in the instances of breaking news, to get it out to your audience quickly and accurately and make sure that they are as informed as they can be if something is going on in the community or state or nation around them. So you have to learn a different sort of compartmentalization, which is not just, you know, you might have a load on your mind and your face might reflect that if you're, you know, not in the TV world. If you're in the TV world, your face cannot reflect that. So it's learning and tapping into a part of yourself. And that's through training and that's through experience. And that's through, you know, decades of doing this, that stuff gets shoved to one side. And the formula of you as the TV news anchor, the person who has presence and the person who has the authority, I use that word in terms of I'm the one giving you the information. You're the one that's trusting me to do that. You have to have that in line. And that did take practice. That took, and in some days more than others, that took fierce focus because there are so many pressing things that come into your life. And just in these past few years, I concurrently lost my mom, my dad, my dog, and my mother-in-law.
Oh.
And this was over the span of a year and a half. And there were days at work in which I was just loaded with grief or sadness or waiting for a phone call or monitoring, you know, a hospital stay or whatever. And I couldn't ever let that break through because I owed it to the people of New Hampshire who were watching that show to not be any of that, to be my regular, professional, expectant self, delivering them the news they needed to know. So it's hard. But it's a trait that once you develop, you can rely on. You can trick your brain, train your brain to bring you back to that when you need it.
So it's checking yourself at the door, essentially.
Yeah, it's checking yourself at that door. Because, you know, there are ways that we represent ourselves. If you go to the grocery store, you know, if you're attending an event and you will represent yourself in a particular way, what that audience needs at that time. But on TV, that's a whole different door. That's a really heavy door. Do you have to make sure that the door closes behind you? And you are that person that your audience expects you to be and that your boss expects you to be. You know, you have a job to do. So In doing that, what I would do is sometimes, even a tactile reminder, I would hold a pen and sometimes just, you know, click the top of the pen, and that would sort of bring me back into, here I am, I'm at the desk, this is what I need to do, this is what I am doing, this is what they expect of me. And that would help. There are other things too, you know, in commercial breaks, I would move around a little bit and, you know, I would remind myself, I would look out beyond the, you know, the TVs that line up in front of us, like the prompters and the cameras that line up in front of us, the monitors are below. I would look beyond that. I would look at the door exterior to the studio. I would see the windows where the rest of the newsroom is. So I would just sort of constantly remind myself of what was around me. And that reminded me of my job, where I was, and that shift in my focus and my brain to make sure I stayed.
I never really gave that some consideration around the mental status that one needs to be in. So regardless of what's happened in your life the day of, the day prior, that becomes a skill. And I've never really thought that as being a reality for people in the business.
I think in terms of my experience in TV, it might surprise people to know that I am genuinely very close friends with my colleagues, that in my TV experience, it is different from what might be represented in a movie or on a TV show, that there is this infighting or banging of heads and sabotage or subterfuge going on to leap bound other people or leave somebody behind or show somebody in a terrible light out of competition, greed, or ego. And that just has not been my experience. Some of my very best friends have been my colleagues through the years. When they leave my station and go on to do other things in life, I still talk to them all of the time. They've known my kids. They know my husband. They know my family. They support my work with books. That might surprise people because I think it is honestly a lazy representation sometimes for media to be showcased as this backbiting industry full of fake people who have no emotion, who are, you know, out there to further their own career and block anybody who gets in the way. That has not at all been my experience. And to this day, my very dear friends are the people that I've grown with and grown up with in this industry.
Yeah. I mean, you're people, you have families and you have a life outside of work, but you're right. I can see how a single focus lens might be put on somebody when they're looking at a TV news anchor and not realizing that there is a living, breathing human being behind the persona, if you will. The other thing I'm curious about is you mentioned the importance of focus in your field. And I know how that's so incredibly important in general, but certainly with broadcast journalism. Can you describe a moment, an on-air moment, where your ability to concentrate was significantly tested?
There are more of those moments than you might realize. It's not necessarily one or two, and I can point to a major breaking news situation in which the information is coming at you and it's changing. And remember, when you're in the position of being the TV anchor on the TV, you're not watching all the other channels. You're not watching what they're coming out with because they're covering the same breaking news stories that you are. You're focused on what you're doing in that moment. You're listening in your ear to your producer who's bringing you the information from the booth. And, you know, if I can, you know, say we're in video or something and I can check my phone and I can actually see other sources bringing in information, but your focus could be pulled apart in those situations because it is so fluid. It is so fast. You have to have the presence of mind to maintain accuracy. And even though I can give you another, like, more succinct, for instance, there might be an occasion in which we're covering a breaking news story. And sometimes I've been on the desk for breaking news for hours on end. And we're trying to remember what already has happened, trying to remember where all of the principals are, trying to remember what all the responding sources are delivering to us, the law enforcement angle, every angle, being responsible with what we're reporting. And my producer might indicate to me in my ear, hey, we can't report this yet, or we're not going with this yet. And then they'll relay a piece of information. If I didn't have a good grip, a focus grip, I might blab that right out at an inopportune moment. And an inopportune moment in TV news might be something like, everybody is watching this unfold, but what about the family at home that's being impacted by this? And they don't know this information yet. Maybe we had a trusted law enforcement source give us the information, but not the okay to go with it yet. what about that family at home that doesn't know that their loved one has been impacted? Yeah. And what if they had to hear it from me and not through the proper channels? Mm. So you have to have that very rigid, tight control over your focus to make sure that you're keeping the streams going, you know, like they're all coming in, feeding this one big ocean of breaking news, but then they divide into all these tributaries and streams. You got to keep all of those straight. And you have to make sure that that sliver of information, we're not going with this yet, but that stays,
wow,
you know, in your head and doesn't unfortunately come out before it's ready to come out and that you have the green light to let that out. So that's one of those most succinct situation awareness things in which you've got, your focus cannot waver. It just can't, because lives depend on it. The safety of law enforcement, say it's like a hostage situation, whatever the case may be, lives depend on that. A family has just been broken or damaged, or they're about to receive the most horrific news. You cannot be the one that breaks the trust between the regular channels of how something has to go down.
Wow. That's another piece that I never considered. You know, and it's more than words on a teleprompter. You're getting real live prompts at the time that they're having those releases, and you have to use your judgment in terms of what to release and what not to release based on what they're telling you.
Exactly.
And that's, I've never done anything like that, quite frankly, but I could imagine the focus that you need to have and the discipline around that to be able to be consistent every time that you show up. So you've honed that skill, you've honed focus over the years. And I'm curious, I would imagine that it's applied outside of the newsroom in your life as well. Can you share how you've adopted that level of focus in different areas of your life?
I think in being a mom, the area of focus is very tightly wound into constraint, because you might have automatic reactions as a parent or as a loved one to someone going through an event, a problem, a trauma, and you have to control how you react in that situation. So your focus then becomes constraint. And what do I need to do as the authority figure, as the parent, as the trusted confidant in that instance to not go with my worst instinct, which would be to protect somebody, but it might not be the best way to go about doing it. So in family, focus means constraint. And then as I write, focus means keeping myself disciplined and keeping myself on path to completion. Because if you're doing something that's not your main job, which, you know, when I write books or I ghostwrite, that's not my main job. That's just something I love to do on the side. So that's going to take discipline from me and true focus to make sure that I can deliver on these things and that I maintain a schedule and I have no excuses, because there are a million excuses every day that we can fall upon. Anything to distract us from getting a job done, or anything that can pull us away from doing something we know we need to do. So in that respect, focus is accountability to myself and making sure that these are the morning hours that I can work on my book, or these are the morning hours that I can have phone calls and do podcasts like with you. And this is how I can make this work within the constraints of what else my day might look like. So focus then becomes a disciplined approach to all of the other things you want to fit into your day, and then holding yourself accountable. And, you know, when I do author talks or I talk to kids, and they'll always ask, how do you even get started in writing? And what do you even do? And I'll say, you just get started. You know, you don't dilly-dally in your head and make a million excuses as to why, well, I'm not experienced and I don't know how to do this. You just actually start to do it. And then, you know, conversely too, if it's not coming that day, and there are many days when it just doesn't come for me, you know, the creativity, it's not there. Like the spark is dull. So I will just step away that day and give myself a pass and say, whatever you were going to write probably was not going to be your best. So this is okay. And we'll come back to it another time. But the focus and the discipline in that right there is making sure that you always come back to that a different time. And that's like the focus at work when you shut the door and you make sure that you're there. That's another door that you have to make sure you close. You know, you're not going to escape out that door every single time. You're like, oh, I don't think I want to do this. No. To achieve and excel and be extraordinary at something, be successful and be available, you have to make sure that that door too, the one that might be in your morning hours, in your free time, that door gets closed behind you too, so that you can't sneak back out again.
Yeah. See, that's super powerful, Jennifer. And I think for me, I take away giving ourselves some grace, even though we've planned on writing. We planned on doing something in a given day. If we're not physically or mentally able or ready to do it, even though we know we should, I think it's important to give ourselves some grace, because tomorrow's another day, hopefully, you know, and or later in the day when we're feeling more primed to do it. I think it's just having that awareness is really, really important.
You're right.
Yeah. The other thing too that I find fascinating with you as an individual, your line of work and the pressure around it, and of course, doing it 30 years, you've honed your skills to be able to navigate through all the offshoots, the landmines that come your way in a given day. But on the topic of all the craziness that goes on in this world and all the newsworthy headlines that we're seeing, whether it's local tragedy or disaster, or if we're on the global stage and we're, you know, looking at all these threats that are in our global geopolitical world, there's some emotion there for the viewers, and there's also some emotion for you and for other broadcast journalists. I would imagine that because you're so well skilled at managing your emotions and doing the things that you do, I would imagine though that sometimes those emotions still come up, because you're human, you're a compassionate person, you feel for people. And so there's really a two-part question. A, and I think you've kind of answered this, when those emotions start coming up, it's like a light switch for you. You can probably trigger the other side of you, the logic, the control, the constraint. But how do you do that? And then ultimately for people that are struggling with emotions in their lives, especially when they're consuming news that's not good news and it puts fear into us, what would you suggest to them in terms of being able to handle that and have an observer mindset when it comes to the news? What would you say to that?
That part first, yeah. When you're observing, consuming, taking all of this in. And remember, you know, a lot of our 20-somethings and even younger, they're consuming news via social media app, not necessarily sitting down and watching a newscast. And in that, there is power. Let me explain that. There is power for a trusted loved one, a parent, a guardian, come in and physically remove the device so that you can force disconnectivity rather than the constant connectivity that generation and these kids have grown up on and expect and are so comfortable with. For the rest of us, you know, the adults who still watch TV news or, you know, plug into CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, and you're consuming it that way, again, there's a disconnectivity that is appropriate and it must happen. And I say that from somebody on the news. You know, I don't want you to not watch. I don't want you to walk away. We need our viewers. It keeps our jobs. It keeps us going. It's important for what we do. But at the same time, I am the very first one to say, you got to shut it off. Mm. And we'll talk about that at work. When we manage it at work, I think there's this ingrained sense of we're all there for each other. There's a lot of the younger producers or reporters who come in, and I like to touch base with them every once in a while and just ask, how are you doing? If they've been through a tough story, if they've been experiencing something that I know they saw on the job, I would like to check in with them and say, are you okay? I know what you just saw. I know what just happened. And I like to explain to them, I've been there. I know that you're going to be okay. And I know this because I've been okay. That's a really important thing for us in our generation, to talk to, connect with, and almost like touch the generation behind us. Because it seems that this generation, whether it's the constant connectivity that we just talked about, or whatever the case may be, the pressures of being in that generation, the pressures of the world, the pressures around them, I feel it is our duty to make sure that we are stepping in when we can to touch base with them and say, it's okay, you're going to be okay, because I did the same thing as you did when I was your age, and I'm okay, mostly. But to sort of give them, lift the veil a little bit and say, I know that this feels intense in this moment, but I promised you, you will get through it. You will see the other side. And then this will become experience to harden your focus, to make sure that you know, you have the mental boundaries to do your job when you're doing it and then step outside of it when it's over, to disconnect when you have to. So it's almost the same concept as a person who doesn't work on TV, as a person who does work on TV, is you have to have the connectivity to life around you. You know, if there's a particularly potent thing going on in your life, there are a few things you can do immediately. First of all, if it's a breaking news situation on TV, you can step away for 15 minutes because you know what? It's still going to be going on 15 minutes later. But for that 15-minute break, you can go for a walk. You can make dinner. You can go pour yourself a cold drink. You can do some deep breathing. You can close your eyes. You can rub your temples and try to get rid of the headache that just formed. There are things that you can do in those 15 minutes that disconnect you from the horror, from the stress, from the drama, from the trauma that's going on in front of you. Now, in TV, it's more of that reaching out to those who are on the scene, reaching out to those who are behind the camera. They're seeing horrific things. You know, interesting point. I don't mean to digress, but interesting point for TV news. Oftentimes, our photographers and reporters show up on a scene before law enforcement has even arrived. So they see things that in another industry, they would be taught how to decompress, and they would have decompression sessions. And we don't do that in TV news because it's, you know, it's fast. It's on to the next thing. It's a very rapid progression of events. And so if you showed up at a scene as a young reporter, say, or a seasoned reporter, I mean, we all do the same things, and there is horror all around you, it might truly be before law enforcement even gets there. Mm. You don't have the skills to help anybody who's been hurt. You don't know what to do because you're not specifically trained in that incident. And yet you still show up and you handle the incident in your way, which is to broadcast news about it, to let the public know. And that in itself is, it's very long lasting. It can be innately damaging. And that brings back, you know, connecting me. There was a responsible person who's been in the industry for, you know, some 27 years now and seen it all. It's my responsibility to check in with the newer reporter, someone who hasn't done this before, hasn't seen it as much as I have, and make sure they're okay.
Wow.
And through life, all of us should be doing that.
Wow. Yeah. That is really, really powerful. And again, all very enlightening to me because these are things that we don't think about, especially as consumers, and we you know, turn on TV or any news feed and we capture the news. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that none of us are really aware of. And so this is really powerful to understand this. And I think to a large degree in the manner in which we consume our news today, which is so many different channels, so many different social media channels, so many different methods. There's bad news saturation. Let's talk about that. And then there's fake news. What is that concept and its impact on both news professionals and viewers?
On viewers. Let's put it this way. You wake up, right? You've got a morning routine. Oftentimes that might involve going down to the kitchen, making some coffee, sitting down and turning on the TV, right, to watch the morning news. And that way, you know what the weather's going to be like, you know what's going on in the world. But before you take your first sip of coffee, you're getting hit with, you know, this is happening here. This is a disaster. This is going on here. The reporter and or the anchor might say something about your preferred candidate that you don't agree with. And already, you know, your blood pressure is going up. You can feel yourself tense. And that's before you've even finished half your cup of coffee. So that is saturation. Now, most people will eventually have to go to the gym or get in the shower, get in the car, get off to work. And then that's when you have the luxury and the privilege of shutting that off. So that's what saturation looks like first thing in the morning. And oftentimes at night when you're coming home and you're making dinner, you turn the TV on to see what's been going on all day again. It hits you. It's like a pelting rainstorm. You know, they come, the news stories come, your perceived bias comes at you. You know, before you know it, you're yelling at the TV and you're like, I can't believe they just said that. That is not true. And there you go. So you're saturated at the front end of your day and then you're saturated at the back end of the day. So it's that removal disconnectivity process that most people can access. I highly recommend it, even though I'm in the business. For us on TV, I think it's mental breaks. And again, I point to in my experience, my very lovely newsroom that's full of friends and confidants and people who have my back and people who know I have their back. And it becomes just sort of in commercials. For instance, you know, we talk a lot in commercials, even though our mics are down. As a viewer, you'll watch the commercial roll. But what we're doing back in the studio is we're talking about pets. We're talking about kids. We're talking about houses. Hey, did you see that new listing that went up in this particular town? We're talking about, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, you're going to that restaurant. You'll have to let me know how it is. That is enough for us in these little 3 to 4 minute breaks in which the commercials roll, that it sort of level sets us. You know, even though we might have been horrified, we see the same images that you see at home. We see more of them because we see the unedited version of the video that comes in. So we see exactly what you see. We hear exactly what you hear, where it's coming out of my mouth. So our disconnectivity or removal from the bad saturation is honestly and truly a break in between. We call them blocks. So after the A block, we get a commercial break. After the A block, we'll sit in that commercial break. We won't talk about the horror of the story that someone just reported on. We'll talk about, do you have that wedding this weekend? Where are you going? Oh my gosh, you're going to that state. Wow, let me know how, you know, that restaurant was. That's sort of what we're doing. And maybe it's by default. It's just something that we slip into for regularity and because we need to. That removes it, at least temporarily, until we roll into the next block. But that is vital because, it level sets us. It gets our heads back on straight and it lets us remove ourselves, at least temporarily, from everything you just saw. It bothered you. Trust me, it bothered us too.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that there's really two different types of camps for people. On one hand, you've got the consumer of news where, you know, that doom scroll is a constant thing for them. And sometimes they don't even make it out of bed and they're doom scrolling. And I've been there and I'm one of them. On the other hand, in another camp, you've got people that refuse to watch the news because it's negative in their minds and it's not going to help them. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this because I think there's a middle ground. I think it's really important to be in the know, at least knowledgeable about current events and what's going on without it consuming you and changing the narrative of who you are. If there is an issue that takes place locally, globally, and you're not in the know, it means you're not prepared. Maybe you're not prepared for your family. You're not prepared for certain things. So what are your thoughts around those two extremes?
I feel like the middle has changed as technology has advanced. The instantaneous access has led us to a point where you really can't be so much in the middle because it's all around you all the time. It's accessible from multiple entry points. The bad saturation can get you no matter if you have a chosen position of that middle, right? It comes at you no matter what. So I don't think, and maybe it's because I'm so ingrained in this industry and it's been my whole life and career, I don't think it's compatible with our daily lives and demands and pressures and opportunities to be thoroughly disconnected. I just don't. I think we have a responsibility to be partners in this world, you know, and human partners to each other, and to be fully disconnected from what's going on around us probably isn't the best way from my perspective to go through life. But again, that's only my perspective. And that just means that, you know, I've been in this industry for so long that I think it still plays a vital role in what we do. For somebody who's trying to maintain calmness, I can appreciate that too. And in that instance, again, I kind of refer back to when you've hit the saturation point and the morning news has bombarded you. You are allowed to disconnect. And within that disconnection is life. And within that disconnection is happiness and joy. And it's the things that you seek outside of the saturation points. It's if it's your morning news or afternoon news, evening news. It's the things that you seek in the middle that keep you grounded, that keep you happy, that keep you connected to your friends and your family. And one thing that I'm not liking right now, and I feel it more than ever, is the combativeness that we feel or portray against somebody of a different political mindset, political values, someone who might vote differently than you. And that has exacerbated through the years in my watching it from somebody in the industry, watching it develop all around us. That has exacerbated through the years to a point that's concerning to me because that's a genie out of the bottle, right? And on social media, if you can rant and rail and you can call somebody out from behind your keyboard that's different from having a disagreement with somebody who might have written an op-ed that you read that you didn't like. You know, you can reach them. They can hear you. They can listen to your points. They can be hurt by your points. You can hurt them by your points. You can hurt yourself. That is an escalation that I'm not sure collectively we know how to handle yet. Mm. And I'm not sure how to put it back into a point where it gets better. And that impacts all of us, because that might be me, you know, tweeting out an event that just happened, but somebody seeing that tweet and saying, no, that didn't just happen. And then it becomes this silly sort of regurgitation of, well, no, I'm right. No, I'm right. And this is right. No, you're wrong. How do we get to the point where we function having disagreements, political disagreements, and still having friends that might vote differently than you, and still having teachers who vote differently than you, but aren't teaching your children a particular way to think? That concerns me a lot with where we go, and the responsibility of the media to keep that in check and to not fuel that fire. Because I think in many cases, and this is a very honest take, and it's a critical take of my own business, in many cases, we fuel that fire.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense as to why some folks just disconnect completely, because they see the level of dysfunction and the infighting and the things that are taking place at a great level. You know, if you're a child and you're growing up in a home and your two parents are constantly fighting with each other and they're fighting over lots of different things, and it becomes ugly, and you grow up in that world, when people see that happening in our government and they see it happening with political figures, it disappoints a lot of people. It also makes us as a country look very silly. Countries of all types have their challenges as well, but you know, it always trickles down from the top. And I'm deeply concerned about it as well, and I don't know the answer. I don't know how it gets fixed, because it's such a big issue.
I don't know how it gets fixed either, but I think it's critically important that we start to talk about it. And I, again, you know, I lean on this responsibility that I feel to the people I work with, my friends, my family, to be accessible, to be available. And it might not be that I love what they're telling me, you know, especially like think of you as a parent, and you always want your kids to understand that you can come to me no matter what. Doesn't mean that when they do come to you, you're going to love what they're telling you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might be horrified by what they're telling you, and you might have absolutely no idea in that moment what to say back. But yeah, they're coming to you, which means they're not going to somebody else, which means they're not keeping it inside of them. That said, how do we collectively get to the point where society, humans, each other can come to you, and yet we handle whatever they tell us with grace, and we maintain the relationship? You know, I think so much of this is in maintaining the ability to talk to each other, maintaining the ability to sustain a relationship despite our differences. That's so fragile. That's so fragile right now. And we have to take that back to a point where that is just the norm.
That is super, super powerful. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think that as long as we as people remain curious and we stay in that curiosity mindset, and it's okay that somebody has a different opinion, because we leave our minds open, then we may just learn about a different position, a perspective that we didn't consider prior. But if we keep ourselves closed-minded and it's our way or the highway, and we become defensive and it becomes a reflex, it's going to create an inflamed dialogue. And that's not what we want. Talk about the single-lensed mindset versus one that's adaptive and really just understanding other people's perspectives, because we can learn from everybody.
I can still vote however I choose to vote. Nobody is stripping me of that. Hmm. But it doesn't mean that, like you just said, my mindset can't be open to somebody else's position. It doesn't mean that I can't treat a divergent opinion with disdain or react to it aggressively. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means that I have the privilege to do everything that I've always done. But how about if I do it in a gentler way? How about if I still maintain my ideals and my ideologies and my perspectives, but I give you the respect to listen to yours? That's all this really should be.
Yeah, in its simplest form. Before we move on from this topic, I think that oftentimes the individual who has the strong opinion, the way that it's delivered then creates a ripple effect in the person that's listening to it. Let's learn how to communicate better with each other. I think that would be one of the best things that we can do instead of jockeying for position and trying to win an argument. On a lighter note, can you share something that just fluttered you with joy and influenced your perspective in your life or even just as a journalist?
It might happen when I've been invited to speak to a class. It might be when I'm in a book situation and somebody says, they wait after, you know, I've signed the book and then they're still waiting in line and then they come through and they say, I just want to tell you, I saw you at this event and I started to write my own book because of what you told me to do, which is just go do it. And that, you know, I leave that thinking about that person and the event that we had prior and what I might have said that day that said to them, you can do this too. There's nothing wrong with trying. I'm a total sucker for the stories that we show on TV with a military person coming home and surprising their family. It brings me close to tears, as close as I've ever been on TV, without fail, every single time. Ugh, it just hits me. Animals hit me. Somebody doing something completely unexpectedly kind and generous and gracious to somebody hits me. And it reminds me all of the, when I was coming up as a young journalist, and it was a mix of city council meetings and town council meetings and, you know, trying to track down this senator who's going to be at this event and getting a one-on-one with this presidential candidate who's coming through New Hampshire. And I would do my job, right? And you would come back with a video in the interview and you would think, okay, I got it done. But when you go out and you cover something that's at an apple orchard and they're doing a charity event for a little boy who might be going through a health crisis, and you know, you see his family show up and look at the community turnout and know that they're there for that person, that family, that kid. Oh, that gets me too. There have been really funny, spontaneous moments with presidents and their families that make me laugh when I think about them. Funny, spontaneous moments right before we go live when, you know, I'm leading an interview with Barack Obama, for instance, or whoever it might be. That we'll have a genuine moment of just, you know, two people talking right before the camera goes on. That's one of the things that I've done through the years is just try to talk to them as people right before we go on and, you know, we're live, just to sort of bring them like, it's all going to be okay. You know, I'm just another person you're talking to. It's just another interview, and remind them that this is good. We're fine. I love those moments, but anything, and it's not even the feeling of me in the moment doing it. It's what somebody else is doing that I get the privilege to see. And it's a range, but I can tell you it's every day. It's an animal story from, you know, hey, a baby giraffe was born at this zoo. And I love it. And it just is, it's that bad saturation break that gives you something else to look at and laugh at and think about. And honestly, thank God we have those moments, because everything else can be so heavy that I love those moments. And I think I grab onto them with two hands because I need them so much, as do the rest of us in the studio at that moment. So they're everywhere. They're all around us. And I always tell people too, you know, give us story ideas. If you see something amazing happening in your community, at your school, at wherever, and they do all the time. You know, for instance, yesterday I was at a store somewhere and the owner of the store said, Jen, I have this awesome story. It's a musician who's local to New Hampshire, but he has played with every name you can imagine. And he's got the stories and the pictures to prove it. So you know what I did? I took that information back and I went to the producer of the show that covers all of that stuff. And I said, I have a really good story idea for you. And you know, they're going to pursue it. And then that is the glory of being in a place where people can come up to you with the good things. I love that part. It opens my world into something that's right in and around me that I might not have known about, that we can then share with everybody else. And it's that good saturation at the end of the day, the moments that really hit.
There's a lot of beauty in this world that sometimes gets clouded. Seems to be every time you turn the news on, there's a negative thing going on. We also have a choice in what's coming in our news feed and in the information that we want to bring into our psyche. And we have to balance that stuff out.
You're right. You've got to break the bad saturation points with the good.
You're a serial author, and you have a series of books, which I'm going to drop in your show notes for everybody so that they can follow you and buy your books, because you've accomplished so much in your life and you've overcome a lot. I mean, you've had lots of lessons learned. You've done the hard work to bring yourself to the point that you're at right now. But for somebody that might be struggling with some insecurities, and we all have them, but if those insecurities are causing them to be stuck in their lives, they're not filling the things that are important to them because they don't know the way forward, they're lacking confidence or courage, what would you say to someone that's feeling that way, given your background and who you are?
Confidence is such a big part of life. Both of my children were college athletes, and confidence, you could see it ebb and flow almost in real time. And that was in spite of how my husband and I raised them. That was when they're exposed to the rest of the world and they're graded on different planes. And I attribute that to them because it was one of the most obvious fractures that we could see going on. And look at a team, you know, look at a business. Confidence is huge, and it's just so tenuous, and it's almost this vague reference to a thing we don't even really know how to identify. So confidence through your life, I've always looked at it as in confidence and ambition go like this, right? They're like two together. You have to have confidence to have the amplification of ambition, which is you can have a thought, I want to do that. But without confidence, you don't take the steps necessarily to actually do it. So when you're following this path of ambition, you have dreams and you have goals, consider confidence the first step in trying to make them happen, and then every step in between. For instance, in my industry, I wasn't sure I could do this. I knew I wanted to, and I had the early confidence to try. So that was the first step through the door. So then once the door was open, I would say, oh, I don't know that I did really well on that particular story. I don't know what I could do better, but I feel like I missed something. And that entailed collaboration with others around me, people who were better at it than I was at the time, people who had had more experience. I would ask them questions. So confidence is part of your being able to receive criticism and being able to ask questions and being able to ask for it. Because sometimes you might close a task or finish a project and you don't want to talk about it again. You don't want the criticism from somebody who takes the project and then dissects it and says, well, maybe, Jen, you could have done better on A, B, and C. And I don't know what you're doing over here on H and J. But I always tried to stay wide open to that, because at every point, hearing criticism, asking questions about, was that the right way to approach this? Was that the correct way to phrase this? Did I reach out to the right source? I learned. And if you don't seek the criticism of what you could have done better in that moment, you will never graduate beyond that moment with the confidence you need to maintain the path of ambition. Hmm. So I look at confidence in the same way as being open to hearing that you didn't crush it. You didn't win. You weren't successful. You weren't the best. I've always sort of understood that that's a necessary part of maintaining confidence to crush that hurdle, to win that game, to be the best I can be, to get better. And if that's a lifelong thing, you never close that door, because you can always be great at something. But imagine the moment you could have on the next project or the next newscast or the next story or the next book. If you talk to somebody who's been doing this as long as you have or longer, and they said, hey, what about that? Hey, did you consider this? And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I asked you. I didn't consider that, but I will next time. And that brings me to a project more confident than I was before.
Yeah, it's being open. You have to be open to all sorts of feedback.
The hard talk. You can't run away from that stuff. That makes you better.
Jennifer Vaughn, everyone, thank you so much for coming to the show and sharing your story with us. We're going to have all the links to your website and to your books in the show notes so our friends can learn more about your work and pick up a book or two and read about your wisdom. In the meantime, friends, you can visit jvwrites.com. That's the letter J, the letter V, Writes, W-R-I-T-E-S.com, to learn more about Jennifer and what she's all about. And thank you for tuning in to Mindset Reinvented. If you found value, as I always say, please pay the show forward with others who may benefit by listening. There's a lot of gold discussed on this show. The key is that you never know what someone needs to hear today, and you can be that bridge to putting the show in front of them. So with that, if you're not on our email list, make sure you visit us at mindsetreinvented.com so you can get notified of our newest episodes. Until then, keep living your best life and see everybody soon. And Jennifer, again, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.